we're ready for Proc now. The attorneys are here. And this is case A18-1824, State of Minnesota versus Eric John Procknow. Counsel, when you approach the podium, would you please state your name for the record? You'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith, and I represent the appellant State of Minnesota in this state's pretrial appeal. This is a simple case. The issue in this case is simply whether Trooper Christensen had reasonable, articulable suspicion to expand the scope of the traffic stop here. In his report and in his testimony, the trooper articulated no fewer than 14 individual facts, which, when filtered through his training and experience, led him to believe that respondent was engaged in interstate drug trafficking. Despite the fact that reasonable articulable suspicion is a low standard, requiring only some objective facts that take the officer's suspicion beyond the realm of mere whim, caprice, or idle curiosity, the district court found that Trooper Christensen did not have reasonable articulable suspicion and that his suspicion here amounted to no more than an inchoate hunch. The district court was wrong for four reasons. First, the district court incorrectly applied the totality of the circumstances analysis by isolating specific facts and dismissing those that would not provide reasonable suspicion standing alone. Second, the district court erroneously fixated on irrelevant details that, quite frankly, had they been present, would have obviated the need for reasonable articulable suspicion analysis and moved us on to probable cause. Third, and related, the district court did not defer to the inferences Trooper Christensen was permitted to make based on his training and experience. And finally, the district court erroneously conflated the standards of reasonable suspicion and probable cause. Accordingly, appellant respectfully requests this court to reverse the district court's order suppressing the evidence and dismissing the charges and remand this case to the district court for trial. Particularly troubling here is the fact that the district court, though purporting to apply a totality of the circumstances analysis, went through the individual facts that the trooper articulated as giving rise to his reasonable articulable suspicion and looked at them in isolation and didn't consider them in the entire context, considered them in light of the other facts and in light of the officer's training and experience. Particularly telling of this mode of analysis is the district court's treatment of the lived-in look of the minivan here.
Well, Trooper Christensen, at almost 20 minutes, tells Mr. Procknow that the stop's over, I'm giving you a warning, right?
Correct.
And you would agree that the case law is that you can follow up with what you were stopped for. And in this case, it was following too closely and somehow covered up license plate.
Correct. Those were the initial justifications for the stop, yes.
And when that was done and the trooper had investigated those, he said, you're free to leave. Or the stop's over.
The stop was over, correct.
But it wasn't.
The stop, insofar as it related to the issuance of the warning, was over and completed at that point in time. But what was not over was Trooper Christensen's desire to continue investigating based on the additional facts he observed during the course of investigating the initial reason for the stop and issuing that warning ticket.
But Christensen was said, he testified, there were multiple indicators initially right off the bat that led me to believe there was probably criminal activity going on. Defense lawyer said, okay, criminal activity, can you be any more specific? What criminal activity were you suspecting based on your initial approach to the vehicle? Christensen, there's no way for me to know unless I ask more questions.
I remember that exchange.
Yeah. Why isn't that an impermissible expansion of the stop?
That's not an impermissible expansion of the stop because based on the objective indications, the objective facts that the trooper observed and articulated prior to the time when the stop was expanded.
And let me just hone in on that for a quick question, a quick moment. So your position is that the stop was expanded at what point? Is it the 20-minute marker that Judge Riley just referred to?
I think that's a reasonable point to conclude that the stop was clearly expanded. It seems like the district court concluded, and it's tough to say, but this is the best I can find because there aren't independent conclusions of law and there aren't separate findings of fact in the order here. But it seems like the district court believed that the stop was expanded at the earliest when the trooper, after speaking with the respondent in the squad car, left the squad car and returned to the minivan. I would maybe take some quarrel with whether
Did that happen before the 20-minute marker?
That did happen before
okay.
the 20-minute marker.
So.
The district court seemed to sort of fixate on the, I think it was 12 minutes or something that the officer said is pretty typical.
And I think that's based on, quite frankly, a mischaracterization of the record. If you look at the transcripts carefully, defense counsel questioned Trooper Christensen about the whole 12-minute mark, and what that is it's when a particular alert goes off in the squad car. But Trooper Christensen never testified that that was how long it typically took him to issue a warning.
So this is what I find really, among other things, but very odd about this particular stop, is the trooper is testifying that he thinks that Mr. Procknow is up to some sort of criminal activity, probably drug running, and the trooper would also probably say that it's common for drug dealers to have weapons, and this trooper apparently put Mr. Procknow in the front seat of his squad car without a pat search, right?
That's correct.
I
think the trooper was pretty forthright in the fact that he testified here that based on the respondent's behavior and demeanor, he didn't have any specific beliefs about a threat, no reasonable, articulable, individualized suspicion about this individual being a threat to his personal safety. And I think that's admirable because you're right. We all are aware that generally speaking, cops consider drug dealers to be armed and dangerous. But the reality is that we have to have, under the Constitution, a particularized and individualized basis for conducting pat searches.
I just think that I have never seen another law enforcement officer, when they are giving a ticket or a warning for a traffic or equipment violation, not leave the driver in the car that's been stopped, and instead having the driver come and sit in their squad.
I think if you were on Interstate 90 in February, you might have a different perspective on that.
I'd leave the driver in the car, the driver's car.
But the problem is that the trooper is now, to be safest, standing in the ditch, talking across the passenger to speak with the driver. Plus, you have an intense amount of semi-traffic hurtling by at, quite frankly, 147 or so feet per second. The threat to officer safety and the conditions, the weather conditions on this stretch of roadway are sometimes difficult to imagine, if not experienced firsthand.
I drive to Sioux Falls fairly regularly,
so I mean, it's a pretty barren stretch of road as far as there's not a lot of cover from trees. The weather is severe. And I think this is...
From the video, it seemed like a fairly sunny day, but...
It was nonetheless snowy and cold,
right.
But...
Did we get an answer to Judge Riley's question about what his suspicions were? Because I'm looking at the same portion of the transcript, and all I see is things that sounds like a hunch. That is that I think there might have been some criminal activity going on.
Can you point me to a particular page in the transcript so we can all look at the same thing?
Well, I think it's 46, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. Is it 46?
Yep.
Yeah, the question is, can you be more specific? What criminal activity were you suspecting? And then he says there's no way for me to know unless I ask more questions, which seems like, and I don't know if that's what Judge Riley's question was, but it's what mine is, if an officer just has a hunch that there's something going on or there's no way for him to enunciate or say what it is unless he asks more questions, that seems like exactly what Asker Ruth prohibits.
Well, and I think what we're looking at this portion of the transcript, what we're talking about is he talks about right off the bat. When he's up there at the window, based on what he's seen immediately, he's got some suspicions. Maybe we want to call it a hunch at that point in time. But he's still got the business of conducting the traffic stop that he gets to go about, and he gets to continue making observations during the course of doing so.
Right.
And he doesn't have to ignore this.
He's kind of back in the car, and they're talking.
Right.
I've looked at the video. It seems like it was all very conversational. I didn't see any throbbing of his neck. I actually didn't see him when he says he looked at the car and hesitated and then gave an answer. He didn't do that.
I looked at the video, too, and you can't see a throbbing of the neck there.
Sure can't.
I don't think that the video really shows that very well, and the officer was right there. We're not talking about high-definition cameras.
The problem with that assertion is that the officer testified at the hearing that he hadn't reviewed the video, and if he couldn't remember things, the video was the best evidence, which the judge took the officer very seriously.
Sure, but I think that's about some rather more detailed questions about exchanges and that sort of thing. And when the officer specifically noted these observations, and he also specifically noted, and I think this is probably the most significant of the in-squad observations, is the distinctive reddening not just generally of the eyes, but of the conjunctiva. And Trooper Christensen, who is a trained drug recognition evaluator, immediately recognizes that as an indication of recent marijuana usage. And it's unique among drug indicators because it specifically points to one class of drugs. And he observed that. And that, well, he testified that he didn't, based on what he saw, believe that the respondent was currently under the influence. He did testify that based on that observation, he could tell that he had recently used marijuana. And that's significant, because he doesn't have to know that he's under the influence. That would give him probable...
He apparently knew that he was from California, right?
He certainly knew that.
He visited California recently. Use of marijuana in California seems not only to be pretty common, it's also legal.
That's correct. It is legal in California. But it's not legal here.
I understand that, but he drove from California. There's nothing in the way he read his eyes that suggested that the conjunctiva reddened after he left California, is there?
No, but there's nothing that suggests that that isn't the case either. And it also is a reasonable inference that the officer is entitled to make based on his training and experience that people who have recently used marijuana possess marijuana. And his possession of marijuana, if that's what was going on, is criminal in Minnesota. So we don't have to have probable cause to know that a crime has been committed.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you. Sure. Well, you interrupt me. But it's a petty misdemeanor to possess marijuana to smoke yourself, right?
To possess less than 42 and a half grams of marijuana is a petty misdemeanor. That's correct. We don't know what amount, if any, he was possessing. What we're talking about is whether it was reasonable, based on the observations he made, to continue to investigate drug-related activity. And quite frankly, the things that the district court wanted to see in the record to justify reasonable articulable suspicion as it determined it were things that would have given the officer probable cause to either arrest the respondent or search the vehicle without a dog sniff.
Give me a specific example of that, counsel, where you think the judge overstepped and went to the probable cause.
Correct. Specific examples of that would be the odor of drugs coming from the motor vehicle, indications that probable cause to believe.
Yeah, explain that. So you're saying, just throw out your argument. I know you did it in your brief, but I just want to make sure I'm tracking with you. So you're saying that the judge was expecting Trooper Christensen to testify to an odor of drugs that would have given probable cause. That's not what we needed in this case.
That's correct.
Am I? Okay, I am fine.
That's correct.
All right.
Another thing would be the fact that the respondent was under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Again, that would give rise to probable cause to believe that the respondent had been violating Minnesota's DWI laws and subjected him to arrest or further search. Again, a confession or admission that there were drugs in the vehicle. Again, that would give rise to probable cause to search the vehicle, and under the motor vehicle exception, the trooper could have tossed the vehicle at the roadside based on that admission alone. Instead, we have incremental intrusions based on additional information acquired during the course of a lawful traffic stop that was not intolerably expanded based on what the officer was seeing and observing, including the condition of the vehicle, including the respondent's demeanor, including the fact that the respondent lied to him, including unusual and improbable travel plans. All of those things taken together in a totality.
And the lie you're referring to again is?
One example of a lie that you can ascertain from the video is about criminal history.
About the New Jersey
business. The New Jersey thing.
I thought that's what you're referring to.
And then there was another lie, which
but that conversation about
that took place quite
the again. Conversation about New Jersey takes place after he told him that the traffic stop is over.
Sure. And if I can continue just a little bit, an earlier lie would be about not using marijuana. The trooper knew that the respondent, based on his observation, had used marijuana. The respondent lied to him and said he hadn't. Based on those, on all of the facts and all of the record, including the video, the district court erred when it concluded that this was based, that the expansion of the stop was based on mere whim, caprice, or idle curiosity and constituted nothing more than an inchoate hunch. Accordingly, its order suppressing the evidence and dismissing the charges should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, Attorney Jacob Burkholz, representing the respondent, defendant Eric Prochnow. I think the district court's order in this case, I appreciate Judge Moore going above and beyond virtually every suppression order I've ever seen in terms of length of explanation, detail of his reasonings and thoughts behind each and every fact alleged both by Trooper Christensen and as argued by counsel at the district court. I think the position of Prochnow and defense counsel, as it was myself, was that it was expanded well earlier. I think it was maybe some clear points for the for this court is that it was expanded very clearly when the stop says it's over. And the stop being it's over, it can't be really disputed that it was over.
That's somewhere around the 20-minute mark.
Correct. I think the judge says 19 minutes and 52 seconds, give or take.
I was close.
In his findings. I didn't hit the stop button. But, again, where does the stop start? Either way, I would suggest even to this court that it was expanded probably very, very early on. And it was expanded because Trooper Christensen, I think, through a very lengthy and, I think, healthy cross-examination, expanded that he was pulled over this vehicle on I-90 because it's California plates. Nobody gets pulled over for dealer trim without a reason. In fact, this 1.44 seconds was never developed on the record for following too closely. And so this idea that he's standing with a stopwatch, I cross-examined Trooper carefully, that he's, in fact, sitting with a stopwatch on I-90, clicking with 1.56 seconds and pulling people over.
So what he's doing is he's starting the watch. I didn't exactly understand, but like right. When he sees the front vehicle go past some point ahead of him, he clicks it, and then when he sees the second vehicle, he clicks it again?
I guess.
Is that what he's doing?
He's so good at 70 miles an hour, he can click it twice to start and stop at 1.5 seconds. I mean, that's Olympic-type attitude, but the judge said it was close enough. But that is the questioning I had as to, I can't imagine, I've never seen a trooper do that nor testify to that in any circumstance. But that isn't the reason, again, why really he pulled him over. He pulled him over for dealer plates, or he really doesn't know why he pulled him over because he told the driver, Mr. Procknow, a different reason for the stop. Either way, the judge says, well, the stop is close enough because the dealer plates and the law allow that kind of a stop for any reason whatsoever. I think Trooper Christensen in this case...
He probably could have, just to take a little sidetrack there, even without the stopwatch, he probably could have stopped him to investigate following too closely based on a judgment. Right.
Yeah, in fact, the following too closely appears much before the video. The judge makes that comment in the findings that if you watch it, he must have turned it on, you know, much later after this following too closely type of situation. Yeah. So it's unknown.
But the issue of whether or not the initial stop was lawful isn't before us.
We didn't cross appeal.
Right.
So no. It's really the expansion. I understand that, you know, the state versus White and the rest of the arguments that any is any reason for... I developed that on the record, but it's understandably not before this court. But the expansion piece, I think, is helpful because it comes from the argument that California was one of his reasons for the expansion and the reason for the plate being covered. And, I mean, it's almost uncredible, if not incredible, when you read the transcript of Christensen trying to elaborate where he suggests California is covered, that he didn't know it was California, when, in fact, at this, when he pulls the vehicle over, he pulls him over for California. In any event, if you read the transcript closely, Trooper Christensen says, where were these drugs that you arrested? Northern California. Where was this guy? Chico, California. Very Southern California. So the argument that somehow California is a source state that he's going to pull over everybody is the hunch that Christensen is going on from the beginning.
We don't actually have, I understand your argument, but Judge Moore didn't make that finding.
No.
That he only pulled him over because he's from California. And I don't want to make Mr. Smith's argument for him, but I think his argument is that Judge Moore got too deep in the weeds about all these factors and insufficiently deferred to the officer on the scene and his distillation of the significance of all of that in formulating reasonable suspicion. I think that's what he's trying to argue.
I agree. That's the explanation. I would simply suggest that what Judge Moore is saying is we would certainly have suspicion in these categories, and we don't have any of them. And merely identifying that there's a lack of probable cause and then going further to elaborate that there's no reasonable suspicion doesn't make the order invalid. Just, for example, there's no odor of marijuana. Stating that there's no odor of marijuana isn't the judge relying on the fact that there's no order or conflating the standard that the judge clearly doesn't conflate in his
of
findings.
Course, I've never been a drug trafficker, but I would think that if I was going to start, I would be pretty sure not to smoke marijuana in the car just in case I got stopped along the way. Right. That'd be like part of my plan.
I think, you know, ironically, this court probably sees that most of the cases
they do. I
understand
some people don't plan that well, but...
Right. And that's true, and I think... Right, so there's not only is there no order, I...
Well, it'd be almost impossible right. given the dogs.
And it isn't clear in the video how big these dogs are, how smelly it was, or I think if to that point of the quote-unquote lived-in look, there were, in fact, I think was luggage, a fair amount of luggage, because that's where the drugs were found. There's a statement in the record that there was no luggage. In fact, there was some.
Well, there was some kind of
bags.
One,
right.
At least one bag that right. in which the marijuana. But it was it 12 pounds?
10, I think.
10.
Well,
okay. But it wouldn't have to be a real super huge bag for that.
No.
He found only one duffel bag in the vehicle. Was I think the testimony.
Right, and so the point though is that the standard here isn't to dispute whether Christensen is uncredible in his statements. I think his testimony was there wasn't enough luggage when he's peeking through the car approaching for him to suggest that the travel plans were insufficient. I think that the challenge is, again, for the state to prove here, is the judge looks at all of these factors saying luggage isn't enough, the lack or presence of luggage, or whether or not their explanation of their travel plans would be enough to expand, because it's not enough to expand individually or in total. And I think it's important to note that whether or not there's a companion or employment, that the expansion, I think the judge, I don't have the exact times, actually found the expansion occurred prior to to the 19-minute mark, in my view, and the expansion, because the court explicitly states in its order, the expansion went well beyond the conversation of the citation, in fact, discussed travel plans, whether there's a companion, employment, and criminal history in the 1990s. That's a finding of the district court that occurred prior to 19 minutes. So I think the expansion actually, from a finding standpoint, occurred before that. And I think it comports to 12 minutes. And the question is correct. I, as defense counsel, asked Trooper Christensen, when is this stop over? In fact, I've asked numerous troopers, and they all say about 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the 12 minutes is relevant because they get a ding that you can hear on the video back over intercom that you're okay, that the citation should be over according to their standards, and if it's longer than 12, you need to tell us or confirm your safety is okay. And I think that's relevant because this goes, the stop is continuing to be asking questions that have no bearing whatsoever to the stop at all, because he's not finding anything. Trooper Christian is not finding anything relevant, and that's
maybe what we have, as you're arguing it now, maybe what we have is multiple incremental expansions of the stop, none of which were justified by reasonable suspicion.
That's how I, from a legal standpoint, to create the argument. It wasn't incrementally.
I'm not trying to make your argument for you. I'm just trying to make sure I understand your argument.
Correct. I mean, it was expanded unnecessarily by pulling the driver into the vehicle. It was expanded on the type and length of questions. It was expanded in terms of its duration in total. It was expanded when the trooper goes back to talk to the passenger after there was a denial of the consent. It was expanded each and every time. Does it matter which expansion at this point? It doesn't for this court. I've never seen a court indicate I need multiple expansions without justification to support a suppression order. But correct, it is Prochnow's position, respondents, that it was expanded several times, and all of which were without justification or support. And the court, you know, I think is unfortunately blamed in its order for being too detailed and explains its order too well and therefore is improper. I think the other perhaps argument in response to this is that court should say, well, although maybe Minister Smith and the state isn't arguing this, but that this court can't assess credibility. But I think the court is simply assessing objective facts. Were there, in fact, objective facts to support this? Well, if Trooper Christensen says, I need to go check out the VIN and never checks out the VIN, that explanation cannot be used as justification. It's a simple explanation of objective facts, such as a carotid artery, a 1990s conviction question, asking, I think, about his marital status and his employment and his companions. Again, as I think Christensen said, I'm just making small talk. I think, unfortunately, the good cop argument of small talk or trooper safety is in the name of expansion. As from the beginning, as Christensen identified, as this court asked the state a few minutes ago, why pull a driver into the seat? Well, I think it was the Ted Foss law, the pull over so we're going to get run over. That isn't correct because, in fact, he not only says that, he says it's for safety, but then doesn't do a pat check. I need to do it for my safety. I asked that numerous times. What safety concerns did you have for Mr. Prochnow? None. And so not only does he not do a safety check, and I think it's for that purpose of getting more information up close. And so the argument then is when I'm right next to Mr. Prochnow, then I can assess whether or not he's got an odor amongst him, then whether or not his greasy hair means he's a criminal, and then I can assess whether his story is accurate, and I'm right next to him and I'm going to check his pulse. And again, and nervousness, of which it can be seen from the video objectively as the court analyzed, were not accurate to Trooper Christensen. What I find probably most troubling is that the judge goes out of his way, district court judge, to say the trooper is mostly credible, and then goes on to say he's not, about six different times. But either way, the individual facts as assessed and identified by the district court are two objective objective facts that do not support the stop. As the court noted, there's no questions on nervousness by the officer, no checking of pulse, no inquiry into the redness, no odor of marijuana, a denial of use, no actual appearance of nervousness, the 14 reasons as listed, none of which are independently criminal or together are indicative of any criminal activity. And so, as this court noted, I think at the end of its suppression order says, that this is really just about four dogs and no luggage and having a lived-in look. I think that's the district court's inclination of, those are the only reasonable objective facts that appear accurate, as supported by the video and the circumstances.
Let me ask you this question. I'll ask Mr. Smith this question. At the end of the order, the district court said or wrote, while the warning was being drafted in this case, which takes time to review respondents, Procno was subject to questioning about a number of topics aside from the license plate obstruction. Although some of it was conversational, and this is the part I'm curious about, review of the squad video indicates Christensen was clearly searching for more information that would support his initial hunch. Is that a finding of fact or is that a conclusion of law?
I think it's mixed. Mm-hmm. I think the court's making a finding of what the trooper did and then stating it's an expansion in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the court read this order very carefully. There must have been a transpositional word finding error inserting defendant into with Procnow in one of the unpublished cases.
Mr. Lugo and Mr. Procnow got mixed up at one point.
Interesting.
Unless Mr. Procnow was involved in the Lugo case, which I don't think so.
Other cases he mysteriously showed up in. But that's correct. I think that, when courts make memorandums of law, it's difficult on appeal to identify the facts from the conclusions of the law and make clear identifications where the expansion was at each and every location versus exactly what his findings were separated from that. I know as a law clerk, that was always my challenge as well. What are facts and what are not versus your conclusions. But to this court, I think the court adequately identified and perhaps went above and beyond to speak to all of these circumstances and is well supported in its reasoning. And there really isn't any case. We haven't discussed any cases that are equivalent to which would justify reversing this case. And that this case is somehow equivalent to or above a case that this court would have reversed a district court suppression order or supported one in these circumstances. And I think it's important to note that the Lugo case, which is, I think, Judge Moore's own case that he cites himself, his own decision, and said, this is very different. This is very different than the Lugo case, which, again, has to do with multiple factors which were not present in this case whatsoever. And it really allows troopers to take the most minor infractions that you would get a warning for, including I can speak to getting pulled over for window tint violations. I've never once been pulled out of my vehicle on freezing, frozen, icy roads all over Minnesota and have never once been pulled out or expended longer than 5 minutes. And that's exactly, unfortunately, what happened to a California driver in this case, and I ask the court to affirm the order.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. I think the fact that the district court thought that this case was about four dogs, a lived-in look, and California license plates demonstrates that it didn't adequately consider the totality of the circumstances. And based on its analysis, where it goes through and finds a case where this factor wasn't supportive of reasonable articulable suspicion in this case, isolated it from the totality of the circumstances here, which is improper. This is a fact-intensive inquiry that must be conducted on a case-by-case basis. And the Lugo case demonstrates that in spades. The district court's treatment of Lugo was improper. Its reliance upon Lugo for the proposition that a lived-in look cannot contribute to reasonable articulable suspicion doesn't adequately consider the context of Lugo and the fact that the Supreme Court in Lugo, in reversing this district court's order, specifically said in this case, and here's the Lugo case. The defendant lived in Worthington. He was driving a car that had a messy, as the officer described it, lived-in appearance. And he was stopped by the Pizza Ranch in Worthington. There were no other facts coupled with that that would suggest he was engaged in interstate drug trafficking. And the officer in Lugo didn't explain on the record why that lived-in look was significant to him, why it led to the conclusion that there might be drugs in the vehicle. That's not the case here. We have a California driver on Interstate 90. The lived-in look is a lot more relevant on these facts. So the district court was wrong to disregard that, even if you factor in the dogs. Quite frankly, the four dogs on a cross-country trip where you're making no stops only heightens the suspicion. And the district court was wrong to discount that fact.
Suspicion of what?
The suspicion of criminal activity. The suspicion that the
what
people,
criminal activity though?
That these individuals are driving hard and engaged in drug trafficking.
But so how does the multiple dogs suggest that they're drug runners? Help me.
By itself, it may not. But when coupled with the fact that they're driving nonstop and the vehicle has a lived-in look, it does. Again, we can't look at these facts in isolation. The same way with the travel plans and traveling from a source location. You can't isolate those, but the district court isolated those and gave no deference to the inferences the officer drew from those facts. And I want to clarify something about the record. Trooper Christensen never testified, and the record never demonstrates that he knew this vehicle was from California before he walked up to it, on his way walking up to it. Counsel has misrepresented the record in that regard. He pressed Trooper Christensen at the omnibus hearing about that issue, and Trooper Christensen was adamant that he could not tell whether that vehicle's license plate were issued out of California until he walked from his squad car to the vehicle. And the district court never found anything to the contrary. So the fact that this stop was about the respondent being from California is a red herring. This stop was objectively valid. Respondent hasn't cross-appealed the basis for the
stop. He hasn't cross-appealed. I mean, I don't know that we need to go very far down that road because it seems like the stop is okay.
I think it's important because I think counsel is trying to make an implied attack on the credibility of the trooper by suggesting an improper motive, which, of course, is irrelevant if the facts objectively demonstrate that the intrusion was appropriate and constitutional. The record bears out that there was just one piece of luggage, and Trooper Christensen testified about either no luggage or minimal luggage. And again, that was an initial observation. He made these initial observations as he walked up to the vehicle to speak to the respondent about the traffic stop. And he's permitted to continue considering those things and paying attention to other facts. He doesn't have to bury his head in the sand and ignore the other things that developed during the course of the traffic stop. If we're talking about the expansion of the stop happening when he goes to check the VIN, again, the record demonstrates that Trooper Christensen testified he did, in fact, check the VIN. He came back and said the VIN was blocked by a leaf, but he walked around the vehicle, checked the VIN. He was able, he testified, to check enough of the VIN for his purposes. So I think that going up to the vehicle to check the VIN is justified by the purposes of the stop and checking the valid registration. But if this court is to agree with the district court that at the earliest that was the expansion, then I would point to all of the observations that the trooper had made up to that point in time, including the lived-in appearance of the vehicle, the appearance of the occupants of the vehicle, the fact that the respondent flashed a Homeland Security ID badge instead of a driver's license when asked for ID. I see my time has expired unless there are...
Ask one more question. Yes. And page 32 of the district court's order, the district court says, based on the testimony and evidence, it is clear that the officer was determined to find some justification to enter into and search Prochnow's vehicle. Is that a finding of fact?
If it is a finding of fact, and I think it would be helpful to at least in passing provide some guidance to district courts that it would be helpful for meaningful appellate review if we had distinct findings of fact.
It reads like a finding of fact.
It reads like a finding of fact. To the extent that it's a finding of fact, I think it's a finding of fact about the officer's motive, which is irrelevant to the analysis under Wren.
So even though an officer's motive might be to act on a hunch, that's irrelevant?
That's not what the finding is.
No, I'm saying you just asserted that all officers' motives are irrelevant. What if the officer said I was acting on a hunch? Would that be irrelevant?
Well, I think it would be irrelevant because we have to look at the objective facts. Wren says, unless we're talking about inventory searches, and one other category of searches that we don't commonly encounter, the motive doesn't matter. in the ordinary Fourth Amendment analysis. So even if the officer said, I was acting on a hunch, you still have to look at the objective facts and circumstances and determine whether the action is reasonable. Because sometimes officers don't think they have reasonable articulable suspicion, and they do. For all of the reasons I've articulated today and for all of the reasons in my brief, I would ask this court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an interesting case. It is taken under advisement. We're going to recess to attend to our non-oral calendar.